What's your reaction to the changes announced last week to the SAT, the college entrance exam that has been a source of stress for generations of high school students? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, March 11th. Last week, the College Board announced it was changing the SAT to focus more on important academic skills. The changes will be implemented by the spring of 2016 and will include the elimination of arcane vocabulary words. The essay will be optional. It will revert back to the old 1600-point scale with top scores of 800 on math and 800 on what will now be called evidence-based reading and writing. Here's a good one. The guessing penalty will also be eliminated. We'll discuss why these changes are being made, whether they make sense. We will welcome your questions and your experiences. Do you think these changes will be good for students, good for education? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let me welcome our guest. Michael Apple is the John Bascom Professor of Curriculum and Instruction and Educational Policy Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Among his recent books, Democratic Schools and Can Education Change Society? Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. It's good to be here again.
Yes, very nice to talk with you again. So why did the College Board change the SAT?
Well, this is actually a complicated story. On the one hand, it has a new president, David Coleman, who's an interesting person and deeply committed, at least overtly, to what he might call a democratization project to make it possible for more kids to get into college. On the other hand, they're facing a real crisis, as is the ACT, but the ACT is a little less in crisis, which is a lot of places, including some very fine universities, are saying, why are we giving this test where one day determines a lot about a kid's future? Mm-hmm. And so many places are dropping the test. Now, while the College Board is a nonprofit, that doesn't mean that it's not interested in having a ton of kids take the test.
Yeah, so how do these changes encourage more kids to take the test?
Well, before this, Kaplan and Company, Princeton and Company, a large number of places were making huge amounts of money on test preparation courses. So a large number of middle-class children and especially kids from more affluent families were doing test preparation and spending a lot of money on it. And by and large, that would raise a student's score 30 to 50 points. That doesn't seem like a lot, but given the competition to get into good universities, it was a bump. So for many, many people then, it was clear that if you had money, were more affluent, you had a much better chance of doing well. So much of this, then, was an attempt to say, again, the word that's used is to democratize this. It's an odd situation in that the SAT was used initially to establish merit, to keep favoritism out so kids who went to elite prep schools supposedly would not have the usual bump that went on at the beginning of last century. Mm-hmm. It's now come to be that it basically gives a bump to those exact same students with more money, parents who have may not be in private schools with their kids, but who are able to afford all of these kinds of things, test preparation courses, etc. Mm-hmm. So in many ways, it was an attempt to try and ease that, to make it less possible that if you come for money, you automatically do better.
Yeah, I remember taking the ACT because I knew I wanted to go to a University of Wisconsin school, and the ACT was the one in Wisconsin that was required for that. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. The Midwest is much more oriented towards the ACT, which is less time-consuming. There's still the issue about whether these tests really do measure how well you do in school later on, and there's some real controversy over that.
Yeah. Well, so while it's less important, it is still important to have a good score on an SAT or an ACT to get into a good college?
Again, it depends on the school. So places, an example would be Wake Forest, a number of other universities, have said the correlation between doing well on the SAT and getting good grades in school, you know, when you get to college, is pretty weak. A just as accurate measure is this compendium of things, especially your high school grades. So why spend all this money? Why put kids through the pressure? If you know any teenagers, you know, for instance, that starting at 8 in the morning is not a good idea mm-hmm. for anything. Why put kids through this system in which how well you do on one day helps determine how well you do later on, which school you go to? There's also the issue as well about test fear, an issue as well about what the SAT measures. And there's also the question about whether, in fact, there's too much emphasis on the SAT. So many people are moving towards this compendium of things, which I think is wiser.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the changes that the SAT announced. So, eliminating arcane vocabulary words, making the essay optional. What do you think of these changes?
I have mixed reactions to this. First of all, I am not in favor of the overuse of testing, and I think the SAT has been overused. And one of the reasons is you're not quite certain what the grades mean sometimes, so there has been grade inflation. So the idea would be that the SAT gives you this sort of standardized evidence across high schools. But there is this sense in which because you're not sure of what the grades mean, that increasingly schools try and look at the one thing that, in quotes, is evidence-based. It's standardized. Many of these changes were an attempt to say we will then standardize what this means. An example would be Coleman is one of the people who's chair of the College Board, one of the people who is deeply involved in the Common Core, which is very controversial, as you know, mm-hmm. in this state in particular, as well as others, a common curriculum that would establish standards for schools throughout the United States. And Coleman was trying to find a way in which we would have the curriculum linked to what is common that's taught. He also was deeply interested in trying very hard not to have students memorize these sort of boilerplate essays that you would sort of practice constantly and sort of change the topic. So with the essays, how well you wrote, not the content, counted much more. So you could say almost outlandish things that were not factually based, and it read very, very well. So style counted, and whether you actually knew what you were talking about mm-hmm. Counted less. So there is an attempt in many ways, I think wisely, to try and get it more linked to the stuff that students would study in school, and to standardize this and to make it less easy for kids who memorize these elegant essays that show nothing except you memorize this elegant boilerplate. So those things, it seems to me, are pretty wise. But again, there is the issue that I think is sort of the elephant in the room, and that is, why are we putting all this pressure on students? Why are we having a school system based so much on tests when we know very, very little, actually, about whether this stuff actually has an effect on people's lives?
We are talking with Michael Apple. He is a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, talking about the recent changes announced to the SAT, the college entrance exam. And we're welcoming your questions for him. We're welcoming your reactions. Did you have a hard time with the SAT? How about your kids? Did you go to one of these test prep places to help boost your kids' score? Do you like these changes or not? What changes might you make? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 20 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, March the 11th. We are talking with a guest education expert about the changes announced last week by the College Board to the SAT. The College Board says that the SAT needs to focus more on important academic skills that are learned in high school. We're talking about the changes that were announced and the ramifications and welcoming your questions and your reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Michael Apple. He is the John Bascom Professor of Curriculum and Instruction and Educational Policy Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Professor Apple, do you think that the SAT and the ACT should just go away?
This is always the more difficult question. In many ways, I would say that given a choice, I would prefer not to have them. But the question would be, will that solve everything? So, I don't think so. I am not in favor of the use of these things for really crucial decisions, but I want as much evidence as possible when we're making decisions about students' and parents' lives. So while I don't think these are good ideas, there's no doubt in my mind that they don't solve, even with the changes, that it doesn't solve some of the major issues. Let me give an example. One of the things that the changes that are being brought about by Coleman and the College Board is it is something like this. They want to stop the discrimination against minoritized students. So they want the tests to be made more, and practices, for instance, with videos, to be made more available to poor kids. They want to use the Khan Academies, which is this free video process of tutoring, etc., to reach out to kids in, say, poor rural areas and especially in poor urban areas. So the package has some insight in it. But when I was teaching in the slums of New Jersey, which is where I was from, it was clear to me, for instance, that the kids who weren't in the schools that I was teaching, who were in the more affluent parts of, say, New York or elsewhere, at the age of 8 months were sending their children to IQ camps. They were doing almost anything you possibly could at $20,000 to $40,000 a year to make certain that their children had a leg up on everybody else. So while I'm not in favor of things such as the SAT and the ACT, I think they're overused, simply doing that may not change what goes on. And simply making the test prep material and practice tests and practice essays available for free to poor kids may not change the fact that for many, many parents, they're spending billions of dollars probably on other kinds of things to give their kids a leg up. So the IQ camps, the ways in which we try and get an edge on everybody else will still go on. So if we were to do away with the ACT and the SAT, which I think, whether we do away with it or not, needs to have much less emphasis, we still would have to deal with the rest of the way the world operates, which is schools, by and large, do much better for affluent kids. They have more money. So the average amount of money, for instance, spent per year on wealthier kids and kids in the upper middle class, et cetera, could be as high as $20,000 to $40,000. And the schools themselves often will spend $17,000 per student. Yet in Detroit and in many, many other cities, we face class sizes that are going to go up to 40 and 50 students per classroom. where teachers are being laid off, et cetera. So it's a vexed question. Yes, I want less emphasis on it, but we'd have to deal much more if we're serious about school achievement and closing the what we call the achievement gap. It can't just be the SAT. It has to be part of a much larger assemblage of reforms and taking our schools seriously rather than bashing teachers and cutting the amount of money that goes in.
John in La Crosse emails, as a guy who makes part of my living writing, I'm curious about the words that are being dropped in the test. How unused are they? Any idea, Professor Apple?
Well, some of the words, I actually had to go on a computer and say, is this a real word? If I was playing Scrabble, would I get any money from this? Some of the words are archaic. Not all of them, but they are not often, they're not always the words that we would use, even if we were really, really talented linguistically, in daily life. I don't have them right in front of me right now, but I do, when I was first reading the material on this, it brought back many memories of, oh my God, what is this word? So there's no doubt that some of the changes will be towards words that are used more often. I have memories sitting in an SAT room with hundreds of other students saying, I've never heard of this. And I come from a family of printers. So my grandfather was a printer. My father was a printer. I worked my way part of the time through undergraduate school working as a printer. And one of the things about printers is they have quite rich vocabularies. And I was sort of proud about that. And I would, again, face words that I would say, maybe I need my magnifying glass to get out the Oxford on a bridge here and see whether this ever was used other than in England in 1532.
Yeah, well, here, I just looked at a couple, a plethora, myriad. There were some that were much worse than that. We'll look up a couple more, but let's go to a caller, Hector in Eau Claire. Hello, Hector.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I'm a person who had a very low SAT score when I graduated from high school, and I was able to complete college, and my SAT score combined was like 747 points. And I think, you know, less reliance should be given to that test and more on the person's motivation and desire to go to school and willingness to do well than, you know. And I think it impacts on people who, you know, first generation have language problems with English not being the first language that they learned. So I do think that there's some problems with it.
So Hector, you had a low score, but you did fine in college and completed college.
Yeah, I completed college, but I mean, you know, the fact is that it was important for me to finish school. I had help from people who were sensitive to my personal situation. And it was a time when there was even, you know, the concept of open enrollment. I graduated in 1967. I think that there are a lot of things that went into my success. I was a little older. I had finished the military.
It is. That's one of the criticisms, of Professor Apple, is that the test is not the greatest predictor of how a student might do in college.
Yeah, I think. I mean, Hector's story can be repeated hundreds of thousands of times. It's actually part of my story. I come from quite a literate family in terms of being printers, from an extraordinarily poor family, and my motivation was among the most important things. My life was changed during a time when mainly men were dragged into the military, and I came out as Sergeant Apple, but with a very different outlook on life. And because of that, my motivation was extremely high. So I respond very positively to Hector's points, not just because of similar backgrounds, but because we're facing a situation, for instance, where we have among the highest rates of immigration in the history of the United States. So diasporic populations are now coming to this place. You know, the United States is a vast experiment. We should be extraordinarily proud of that. No other nation in the world is trying what we're trying. And because of that, we have to look very, very carefully at the mechanisms of selection that we have. So when Hector tells the story about the deep motivation, and he's also telling the story about a society that when he went to school with, for instance, things like open enrollment and a lot of help, that began to recognize that education was a human right. That is, it wasn't there just to sort and select, to find the most gifted students, etc. Even though, you know, we want to find people who are really talented in math and science and literature, etc. But it saw education as the path for the majority of people to do better in their lives.
Let me jump in. We will pick up on this point after we check the latest news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about changes to the SAT. This is the Ideas Network. The SAT is a mind-numbing, stress-inducing ritual of torture. The College Board can change the test all it likes, but no single exam given on a single day should determine anyone's fate. The fact that we have been using this test to perform exactly this function for generations now is a national scandal. That's from an op-ed in yesterday's New York Times from a writer who was not impressed with the changes that were announced by the College Board to the college entrance exam. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we are talking about those changes and how they might affect students, how they might affect high school instruction, welcoming your questions and your reactions. Some of the changes to the SAT will include an optional essay, no more arcane vocabulary words, a new emphasis on supporting your work with evidence. What do you think of this? And do you remember taking the SAT? Do you think this will make a difference? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Michael Apple, the John Bascom Professor of Curriculum and Instruction and Educational Policy Studies at UW-Madison. Among his recent books are Democratic Schools and Can Education Change Society? Just before news time, Professor Apple, you were responding to our caller, Hector, who said that he took the SAT, I think he said it was way back in the 60s, but didn't score very well on it, but was motivated and went on to college and was successful. What does his story tell you?
Well, as I began to say before we took the break, it tells us something about motivation, which is crucial. It tells us something as well about giving people multiple chances, because I'm certain that it was not necessarily that smooth path. And I started to say something about education as a human right, that what made Hector do well was this combination of things that we tend not to think about, or at least not think about enough. The fact that with the vast array of linguistic differences in the United States right now, it means that we must support people both in their home language as well as the language that they're learning. It means that we need supports on campus. We need supports in high school. And we're facing a situation where all of those supports in many ways in many school districts are being withdrawn. So we focus then on the changes in the SAT, some of which are warranted, some of which may be like changing the place of the deck chairs on the Titanic, at the same time as we are massively cutting funding for urban schools and for many rural schools, where class size is going up, where Hector would not, and not just Hector, but many, many people who live in areas in this state and other states, where they're seeing that there's no teachers for the arts, there's no teachers in physical education. They have laboratories with no material in physics and in math and in the other sciences. So, again, I think that Hector's story speaks to the kinds of things that he had that we are beginning to lose increasingly here. We're losing patience, We're losing money. We're losing respect for teachers. We're losing all kinds of things and seeing that education is not about life. It's about simply getting a job. Well, those jobs don't exist in many ways. So it reminds me about, first, how complicated this is, but about our commitment that has to go further than whether we are simply changing the SAT or not.
Yeah. Let's take another call from Ken in Stillwater, Minnesota. Hi, Ken.
Hi there.
Yes, what's your experience?
Okay, I'm 70 years old, so we're going back even more generations a little bit than Hector did. I went to a decent public school, and so there was no preparation for the SAT, and it wasn't such a big deal in those days. And so we just got sent off to do it completely without any special preparation. It was meant to be and presented as a test of how well our education had worked. And I did well on it. I did well in college, all that sort of thing. And it was only at age 62 that we found out I was autistic, which explained why I didn't do well otherwise. Socialization is very important, and that was not covered in school. That was not covered in the testing. That is not covered in life. And the other thing about the SAT was, we were in a suburban area, and we had to go about 15 miles to get to it. And so many of the kids in my high school couldn't get to it and didn't take it for that reason alone, even though there was a once-a-day bus that could get you there. And a lot of people had cars, which is what I did. That's pretty much the gist of my comment. Yeah. If you have any questions for me, of course, I'll answer them.
Well, I am curious how you were diagnosed at 62 being autistic, but I think that's going to shift us a little bit off focus here. But Ken mentioned that he did have difficulty socializing, and the SAT does not test for that sort of skill. How? What other? Your reaction first, Professor Apple, to Ken's experience.
Well, Ken's experience, I think, again, like Hector's, could be multiplied thousands of times. There is no doubt that historically, it was better to have a little more merit than based on favoritism. And one of the ideas behind the SAT, when he was taking it, was, well, kids in poor areas, who might not be going to these preparatory schools or might have a more rural-based culture or suburban-based culture, that the test would give them a possibility to shine. Now, we know that the test basically measures economic resources by and large. And one of the things that the changes are trying to do is to make these tests more available in more responsive forms to poor kids, to rural kids, etc. So I think that the College Board is sort of trying to take that seriously. But the issue in many ways that's also behind Ken's comments are there's so much else that goes on. So Ken discovers later in life that some of the issues that he's facing in terms of education were not about whether he knew certain vocabularies or not, but his whole being. Mm-hmm. The fact that he had a different way of interacting with the world. And increasingly, because of the cost accountability and cost benefit kind of mentality that we have in schools and in the larger society, we're withdrawing those kinds of things. So increasingly, we're focusing on what the College Board would say evidence-based practices, which is, what's the bang for the buck? What can we predict will enable people like Ken to do better on other tests and at university? But we already know that the effects, by and large, are by whether you're minority or majority. We already know that much depends on whether you are have autism, whether you are have other special needs, etc. Now, this is one of my worries, actually, that we focus so much on whether we want to keep these kinds of tests, which is an interesting debate and I think worth having. But at the same time, as we do understand much more, huge amounts of research that show that it's much more than your test score. So for people like Ken, given the growth that we know of diagnoses of autism, as an example, it's not about the test. It's about whether there will be an environment where thousands of people who might have special needs can go to college, can have an institution that responds to them, can change the way tests are given, can have support, can have people they can talk to. So Ken's story, again, speaks as Hector's does to important things that I think we're ignoring in this debate.
Yeah. Do you think that the changes that were announced by the College Board for the SAT will influence what teachers teach and therefore what students are able to learn while in high school?
I'm not certain that the SAT in particular will have a major effect on what teachers do. And that's because the SAT will basically be geared to the same things that the tests that Pearson is already producing for the Common Core. So on the one hand, this is an interesting phenomenon. So there'll be less profit probably for a little while for Kaplan and Princeton companies as these things, as test prep is made available for free through Khan Academies and the Internet, et cetera. On the other hand, almost everything now is geared towards tests. So we have a situation in the United States that's similar increasingly to China and Japan and Korea, which the tail of the test wags the dog of the teacher rather than the other way around. So I think that the SAT will become just one more factor in some ways of increasingly saying, well, let's have the teacher just teach what's on the test. And we know what's happening right now. So when I go to schools in Madison or in many, many places throughout the United States and I have conversations with teachers, one of the repeated phrases is I feel like there's, you know, like I've lost my autonomy, that I have to be creative in meeting the needs of these kids who have multiple languages, many, many issues about impoverishment, where the teacher has become, you know, the counselor, almost the second parent. We have to worry about feeding the kids, et cetera, that they don't have time to do this. All they think about is how well will these kids do on the test. And because performance pay is now part of the law in this state and many other places, where parts of teachers' pay will be based on test scores, we know that the pressure is intense on administrators and teachers right now to have reality be organized around tests. So SAT will be just one more thing that they'll think about. But by itself, I don't think it will have that much of an influence.
We are examining the new SAT. The College Board announced last week it was changing the SAT to focus more on important academic skills, to focus more on what is being taught in high schools. And we're welcoming your questions, your reactions, your experiences. Did you have a hard time with the SAT or maybe your kids? Was it a useful predictor of your college success or not? What do you think of these changes that are being made? A step in the right direction or not enough? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, March 11th. We are talking with Michael Apple. He is the John Bascom Professor of Curriculum and Instruction and Educational Policy Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, talking about the recently announced changes to the SAT, the College Entrance Exam. And we're welcoming your questions. We're welcoming your reactions. Do you think these changes will be good for students? Will this be good for higher education, for society as a whole? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our next caller is Gary in Johnson Creek. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Joy. Thanks for taking my call. I was just going to say this. It's not really about the SAT or the ACT in your score, because you can have a lousy ACT or an SAT, and you can still go to college and you can do real well. It's all about how you're going to parcel out, how you're going to ration slots to elite universities, because people perceive going to an elite university is going to be something that's going to be beneficial to you. but there's lots of people who go to elite universities who are failures. Just as well, there are lots of people who don't go to elite universities who are big successes.
Mm-hmm. So it's only about the elite universities, Professor Apple?
Well, I think there's a good deal of insight in what the caller has just said. That is, these tests become more important when we have fewer slots. And that's what I meant about my sense being that we have to think about education as a human right, not something that's rationed. There's no doubt that we have a very, very increasingly steep pyramid in this nation. So while we pride ourselves historically on everyone gets an equal chance, that we have high rates of mobility, and the mobility is increased if you go to university, we have the lowest rates of mobility among any industrialized nation in the world. Now, that says something important about how the tests are used. And I think that increasingly, the New York Times publishes things like this, and other places are beginning to say, what's the benefit of spending so much time trying to get into X university when it may not be the best place for your student or for you? So there is a debate about whether, in fact, this is really about we actually have lower rates of mobility, so the tests become more important. So I think there's a good deal of insight in what he's saying. I wanted to focus, though, on one of the things that about these supposedly elite universities that I think also becomes important here. And that also follows up on what the last caller just said. Let's assume that because of the changes in the SAT, we're successful. That is, that there are more poor kids and more minoritized people who get to UW-Madison or Milwaukee or Oshkosh or any of the fine universities, and you'll forgive me, I didn't name all of them, mm-hmm. All of the fine universities in this really, really famous higher education system in Wisconsin that is supposed to be the university for the people. Now, let's assume that we were successful. We do know right now that if we were successful, that things still might not change at the universities. So if you look at the statistics, right now about 6% at UW-Madison of its incoming students are people of color. A large proportion of those people don't graduate. And one of the reasons is not because my colleagues and myself and others are not trying like crazy. It's because of things such as fellowships, the economy that makes it almost impossible for people to pay tuition, having to work three jobs to support yourself. So the downturn in funding for the programs that are necessary if the SAT changes were successful is massive. So the budget cuts for the university system in this great state have effects. So one of my major worries, actually, is that the paths to mobility that become so important at all levels of the university here that the last caller was pointing to actually will make it even harder if these changes actually work. So this is why I always think in public and in my own mind about what are the connections between these changes that are being made in the SAT and probably the ACT as well. What would then be required if these things are successful? And I'm not certain we think enough about that. We, again, focus on just the SAT rather than, well, what happens if these things actually do make a difference? Are we willing then to make the commitment in this marvelous state that we live in, at least marvelous for some people, are we willing to make the commitment that actually makes these things actually successes?
Let's go to Mary in Milwaukee next. Hello, Mary.
Hello. I'm choosing to look at this from a different direction, and that is here in the university in Milwaukee, there are many, many classes consisting solely of students who need remedial assistance in every topic imaginable, every subject imaginable. We have paid a lot of property taxes to get these kids through high school, and yet when they get to college, they need all of this remedial work done before they can actually start the college work. How? I guess what I'm saying is that perhaps things are already too lax with the ACT and the SAT. In other words, how are these kids getting into college in the first place right now if, when they get there, they need all this remedial work?
Professor Apple?
Well, that's a very important point, actually. And this is, again, why I talked about we need to think about the connections between these changes and what's going on in schools and elsewhere. First of all, we have to understand that our system of funding schools is broken. It can't just be dumped on the property tax. So we look, for instance, throughout the United States at the taxes, say, that banks are paying. Banks have been doing extraordinarily well during this horrible crisis that most people are facing. In many places in the United States, the taxes that banks have been paying is zero. So we dump it on the homeowner and then the renter. So that's broken. And we can't make it possible, for instance, for people like the caller to think powerfully about what needs to be done in the secondary schools, etc., unless we begin to think about who's actually been paying for this. And by and large, the people paying for it are the people like your caller. So there's a good deal of insight in what she's saying. And there's no doubt, for instance, that for many poor kids, they're going to schools in which they are not being prepared well. And that doesn't have anything to do with teachers not working hard. The average work week of a teacher in this state is 58 hours a week. When we sort of average that out over a year, they're working 12 months a year, and they're working very, very, very hard. So we do have to focus on what it's like in the secondary schools. What is it like for minoritized students? What's it like for poor students? And what's it like for kids who may come from middle-class families but are bored out of their mind because the test becomes the most important thing there? So I agree that we need to have higher standards. I agree with the caller. But yeah. That's rhetorical unless we're actually willing to put our money where our mouth is about real schools in real communities like Milwaukee.
Well, we'll have to talk more about those issues another time. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
Michael Apple is a professor of curriculum and instruction and educational policy studies at UW-Madison. Thanks very much to Christy Taylor and to Robin Cherry for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come.